we always like to have you check us out on The Valley Outdoors. And where else, Donald?
On Facebook.
Facebook. You are correct. Like us, please. We certainly enjoy having you guys contribute. If you have some big fish, that'd be awesome. Anything in the outdoors, if you have something funny that came up, you know, the outdoor stuff from TikTok, etc. Somebody comes up with something funny,
send us a link.
Please send us, and we will get it on the site so everybody can enjoy it. This is fun.
Yeah, that's fun. We used to do the video thing, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You know, the one thing about the opener, Don, let's say you're successful. You go out and get your limit of walleyes, right?
Yep.
Well, then what are you going to do? Not much else to do. Wrong. Go out and get yourself some crappies. Go have fun. Multi-species is where it's at. You can't tell me a meal of crappies and walleye is not a good meal.
Oh, no.
It'd be a bonus situation.
Right.
And one of the things I find that's kind of funny, I picked up on it a while ago, and all too often everybody says, well, how do I find a school? You know, what do you do to find a school of fish? And oftentimes what your best bet is, troll for them. Throw a bobber out, throw a real lightweight jig with a larva or minnow on it, and pull it behind the boat and slow troll at about 3/4 of a mile an hour behind the bobber. Those crappies will absolutely crush it. When you run into those crappies, you hit spot lock, cast that bobber right back out, and now you're going to have some fun. Just locating that school, you can usually do it, use some side imaging, you can do that as well, but all too often, there's sometimes you just aren't going to have the ability to see it, and you may be spread out, and sometimes you can run into them like that. It's awesome.
Early season, with the crappies kind of being shallows right now, if they're spawning?
They will be, but there's sometimes when they start and the water gets warm like this real quick, they'll move out to that first edge of the weeds or in the weeds area, and you control right along the edge and then find where those fish are at.
And they start schooling up.
Crush it, yeah. It's pretty amazing because that shallow water with the last 4 or 5 days, warm temperature, the northern bays, they're going to be.
It should help this opener.
Oh, it will.
Have you heard how far north what lakes are open yet?
I was trying to.
Any of that are iced up yet?
I was trying to talk to Chris Granrud, one of our friends from Lake of the Woods.
Yeah.
Rainy Days Guide Service, and I couldn't get a hold of him. So my guess is after the show, he'll probably end up calling me. But it's one of those things. I wonder, you know, if his Wally opener will be good. He'll probably give me a call. Hey, we crushed him.
Right.
On ice. Yeah. So you don't know. It's one of those. Right now, because you know, there's a lot of ice. There was a lot of ice.
But it's going to be getting real unsafe.
28-inch. Well, yeah. Don't walk on it.
No,
not a good thing. I thought kind of a fun story, Don, was something I pulled up the other day. I was perusing the internet as I'm known to do, and it's trolling's surprise origins in fishing.
It's got to go back a long way.
Yep, 400 years ago. Trolls haunted the dark forests of Scandinavia, Don. Did you know that? Looking for lost.
Tell me it was invented by trolls.
Looking for lost humans to club in the head with trees, drag them back to the depths of their caves, and eat them. Now they haunt the dark forests of social media, looking for lost posters to goad them with inflammatory comments, drag the depths of pointless, passionate arguments, and emerge for as long as possible. Those two figures have a lot in common. The term trolling surprisingly has no clear etymological connection to Nordic mythology. Despite compelling and controversial arguments to the contrary, it's one of the definitions of troll that actually comes to us more directly from the world of fishing. Right?
Okay.
Okay. The mythological and marine trolling both have their origins to casual violence, the old French hunting term troller, which meant to wander around looking for something to kill or to go hunting for game with no specific purpose. Yes?
They hadn't discovered a catch and release yet, huh?
Soon the casual hunting... Not in hunting. That was the problem. Soon the casual hunting style gained more popular and specific meaning in the world of fishing, which incentivized a patient, meandering approach. Since the 16th century, trolling is described as a process by which one or more baited hooks are drawn slowly through the waters, either by hanging off the end of a slow-moving boat or by a person slowly winding a line in, coming to forefront. Keeping the bait Moving gives it the appearance of life, making it a much more attractive option for fish, and the methods become the industry standard and used commercially and recreationally. Makes sense.
Sure.
Doesn't matter whether it's commercially or not. You've seen those big boats with the big tuna, and you throw the hook over, the boat's moving along, and you just haul them over the top. The sense of moving bait and the word's significance in the 21st century, where it was used to describe similar behavior, decoy military operations, and most commonly on the internet, of course, trolling. The web's early days in 1990, a Usenet comment of folklore enthusiasts used the urban definition and adapted the process to identify inexperienced newbie posters in certain groups. Really, the point comes down to most things on the internet, the process escalated into unpleasantness. And really, when it comes down to it, although the term originated more specifically in the baiting process of fishery and the mythological overtones of troll, an ugly, bloodthirsty, vagabond humanoid wandering around the wilderness looking to feast on humans, it gave the new level of significance for fishing. And what a amazing thing that it did for all anglers.
Well, it's kind of the go-to for beginners.
Mm-hmm. You know,
put a plug on and throw it out and drag it
Let
around.
Let it rip.
Yep.
Tater chip.
Yep. Have you ever done the speed troll with a big spoon?
I haven't used spoons.
For pike?
I haven't used spoons for that. I generally park and throw a bigger bait and more targeted.
I did on one flying trip into Canada. I go, you know, we got to the last day and we caught so many walleyes. Arms were getting tired. So I said, I'm going to try the speed trolling. And of course, all we had was 6-horse motors. And threw out about, 50 yards of line with a daredevil type spoon. Only I was using a Johnson Silver Minnow with a trailer on it. And the motor wide open. As fast as it would
let
go.
Let her rip.
And let her rip. And I was shocked. I think we landed about 8 pike that day.
It's
they
fun.
Catch it. I mean, you can't go too fast for a pike if they see it. The flash in the water, they're after it.
No, and surprisingly enough, too, is you many times can't go shallow enough. When you've got an influx of cold water coming into a warm body of water, mm-hmm. those pike will sit right there. And
in the warm.
And right in the edge of the cold.
Yep.
You want to talk about fun.
Yeah.
I can't say any more about it because I would give away something as far as fishing locations and various places that I've been to.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this. You want to talk about fun. Last year on a rip and wrap, I ended up getting like 5 pike between 28 and 37 inches.
Sure.
And I got over 60 inch sturgeon in the mouth.
Yep.
And I hooked another one this, like 5 minutes after that. So, yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun, and a lot of fun. Speaking of, we are going to be back with more right after this. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Well, Donald, lots of interesting views in the outdoors and a lot of different avenues, and came across one such story. Had to do with the avian flu, and people, they're recommending certain places, the Raptor Center, they're saying stop feeding the birds. Not a good thing, because the feeders, they congregate birds, red-winged blackbirds, having close proximity to each other, increases the transmission of avian flu, which is really happening across the whole United States right now and North America. And the short answer to the headline at the top is, yeah, probably should stop feeding the birds. Long answer is, you should probably not have the bird feeders out, obviously, because it brings so many birds into one place and they can spread that disease.
if you don't have bird seed out, birds aren't going to starve. Right? I mean, they're just, it's not going to create anything. It's coming into that side of the fence. But what they don't want is the spread of what's called the highly pathogenic avian influenza, which is what it's called. Highly contagious to birds. And been lots of reports of waterfowl with the newly highly contagious form of avian influenza this last year. And they migrating north, spreading it to other species this spring. Birds already affected in Minnesota. And of course, the Maine Wildlife Rehab Center in Minnesota stopped taking in certain birds, including ducks, geese, herons, gulls, etc. And they've advised people to stop feeding birds. So University of Minnesota Raptor Center stopped all public tours and sees 90 to 100% fatality rate in infected birds of prey that are brought to them. This is just about what is known at this moment about wild birds. Seven flocks of poultry in Minnesota, as of the article we're pulling this from, have tested positive for the HPAI, and all have been killed. And millions of poultry around the country have been culled due to that HPAI infection. In fact, it's so contagious that an infected duck could fly over a yard, poop, and the landing in the yard would infect another bird. And ducks congregating in open for migration, they spread to others. Birds of prey, like great horned owls, would see a sick duck, eat it, feed it to the young, and therefore perpetuate that whole scenario. Same thing, blue jays and crows scavenge a duck carcass, and so it continues. So that's a sad deal. It really is a sad deal. And, you know, if you look at Alaska, there's a lot of eagles up there, and they're obviously a scavenger-type bird. And if there's roadkill or whatever, then that is also a big issue. So biologists are recommending that the bird feeders, that bird feeding stop. Obviously, to prevent hungry bears from scavenging the feeders, you should absolutely stop feeding birds. If your neighbors have backyard chickens, ducks, or even pet birds inside, don't feed or have a feeder out. It's that contagious.
Hmm.
Pretty crazy. So, some ways, it feels like the West Nile virus, the author says. And back then, they did pick that up for the Raptor Center, and so many birds of prey were affected. I wondered if they ever have any red-tailed hawks left when it was over. This person remembered dead crows all over the place, and they did bounce back. But anything we can do to help those species and keep them flourishing is going to be a big thing. So, I know you're going to be big on this one. Ava, you're going to be big on this one. Invasive species in the U.S. that you can eat.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned this last week.
Yep, didn't get to it. We never had a chance to get to it. Yep. Invasive creatures obviously cause damage to the ecosystem every year. If you've ever been to Texas, you know the feral hog situation is.
Right.
In fact, it's not just Texas. It's everywhere.
Down south.
And
it's moving up, I think.
It's yeah, it is. It's crazy. And those just literally tear everything up. It's not a good thing. Well, they aren't bad by nature, but it's when they start going where they're not wanted, then it seems to be a problem. And of course, we experience that with the fish side of it. When animals are transplanted to areas where they have no predators or environmental checks, they can wreak havoc on that. In the U.S. alone, there's over 6,500 alien species that take an estimated $123 billion bite out of the economy annually. And that is just crazy number. One of the ways to fight back is dig in and see what we can do to eliminate that issue. Invasive species cook-off. How's that sound?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Publishing recipe collections, enlisting celebrity chefs, defenders of native fish and wildlife, and hoping to adopt a new motto. If you can't beat them, eat them. Here's eight invasive species that you can hunt or catch and bring home for dinner.
Number one,
feral pigs.
Sure.
And the word feral pigs looking for food in the woods, yeah, they're pretty much everywhere looking for food. The total lack of restraint is called going hog wild. If you've ever seen the destruction of feral pigs, can visit on a food plot, crop field, or suburban lawn. That $123 billion damage estimate might be a bit conservative, as you and I, we've all seen the damage that they can do. From the tip of Florida to Oklahoma Panhandle, all but a handful of counties have confirmed pig populations. And contrary to what people claim, wild hogs are the descendants of domestic escapees. Handled correctly in the field and kitchen, they can be just as good. The American bullfrog.
Yeah, well, I don't think we have them up here in the Midwest.
Nope. They're native to much of the area, but in places like Hawaii, they are a problem. And they are an eating machine. They eat ducks, ducklings, rats, bats, bass, and other bullfrogs with equal abandon. And they are throughout much of the U.S. range, from Florida to Nova Scotia, the Atlantic coast to Wisconsin, and across the Great Plains. But in areas where it's been introduced, like California, Arizona, Hawaii, it is a voracious predator, exploded, and it's outcompeting every other frog species in existence.
Bullfrog, they get big, don't they?
They can stretch to over a foot long and weigh more than a pound.
Okay.
Nutria, which is a, like, mink. So they're found in 20 states. Louisiana, signing up for statewide Nutria control program. $6 you can earn for every Nutria tail you turn in. Kind of cool deal.
Yep.
They can reach 20 pounds. Northern snakehead, we all love that.
I'm looking
right?
for the edibles.
What?
Aren't these all supposed to be edible?
Yeah, northern snakehead it is.
Okay.
It's good. Very good. Snakehead, you know, fish. Asian carp, I'm sorry, but I'm not buying that one.
You could probably smoke it.
You could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cold smoke.
A lot of money put into that. The lionfish, those are amazing. Poisonous spines on them and a stomach capable of expanding 30 times. And they eat a ton of reef dwellers, so it's not a good fish, but they can be exceptional if you know how to clean them properly. Green iguanas, how about that one?
Where are they at?
Native to Central America, tropical South America, and some Caribbean islands, the green iguanas are extensively everywhere. And last but not least, on your favorite, the armored catfish. Texas, Florida, and Hawaii, they are an invasive, and they are devastating to the riverbanks, and they just destroy the rivers.
Never heard of them.
Yep.
Armored catfish.
Yep. Armored catfish.
What do they taste like?
Chicken, last time I checked.
Yeah. I'm just going to bite chicken.
Originally, they were brought in to eliminate algae. And they escaped and thrived and flourished. So
yeah, next you'll have recipes for all.
I will. I'll have recipes next week. Hey, hope you guys have a fantastic opening fishing weekend. For those of you guys in Minnesota, the rest of the area, hope you have a great time out in the boat or wherever you're going to be on the water. For the Valley Outdoors, for Don, myself, and Ava, we are out.